Welcome to On Topic, a series of conversations with experts and authors on topics of importance to Alaska. I'm Jim Johnson, president of the University of Alaska, and in this segment, we explore the topic of Alaska and Alaska Natives in culture and in film. My guest is Princess Dasrahi Johnson, Alaska writer, actor, producer, and director. Princess is Netsayi Gwich'in from the interior of Alaska. She has very strong interests, which we will explore this morning, in social justice and environmental studies and climate change. And so she's quite an activist here in Alaska and globally even. She holds a baccalaureate degree in international relations from George Washington University and a master's degree in education from the University of Alaska, Anchorage. In 2015, she had the distinction of being appointed by United States President Barack Obama to the Board of Trustees for the Institute of American Indian Arts. Johnson is currently the creative producer for the upcoming public television animated series, Molly of Denali, the first nationally distributed children's series to feature an Alaska Native lead character. The series will debut this summer. Princess, welcome to On Topic. You know, you've done some serious things in your career and in your work, and now kids, an animated kid show. Why kids?
Well, I really would like to kind of start with the kind of genesis of the project a little bit, because I've always, you know, I'm a mother. My children are 4 and 9, and I have a 17-year-old stepson. So as a mother, I have an inherent interest in their education. And who doesn't love children? I mostly have a background in filmmaking from more of a I would say an adult perspective. So like narrative film, and my acting has been geared mostly towards adults, although I did do some children's theater. And when WGBH first reached out about the project, Molly of Denali, I was so excited because I just immediately thought of myself as a little girl and what a show like this would have meant to me. Why kids? Children, you know, they are our connection to so many things. I think to our innocence, to our curiosity and innovation, and that's something that the world needs right now. So.
Well, that's very interesting. I watched a little clip, saw a little bit, learned a little bit about Molly today. And so I wanted to ask you about Molly and you and where Molly comes from and what drives Molly. She's obviously a high energy young person, and she's very curious and is a strong friend of her colleagues in the show. And I wonder about your relationship with Molly.
Well, I think that all of us, and there's so many of us that have given so much input in shaping who Molly is. And she is Gwich'in, she is Dena'ina, and she is Kwekon. We really wanted to represent, well, a lot of our interior tribes. But I think that for me, when I think about being raised by my mother and my grandparents, my grandmother played a large role in my childhood. I think about the lessons that I learned and being guided by my family, but also my community. And Molly really embodies that sense of she, unlike me, is not afraid to make mistakes. And I really love that about her character. And when she does make mistakes, you know, she has this community that gently guides her back in the right direction. And I think that that's something that as adults we need to continually remind ourselves of, is that there is space. And, you know, in fact, you know, failure is necessary. Falling down is necessary. And it's really the standing back up that makes the difference. So I think there's a lot of I really am excited about her character for those reasons, but also just her enthusiasm about learning our culture and her pride in being a part of that.
Again, as I watched it, I was thinking back on time I've spent on the Yukon River, this big, powerful river that flows through the interior of Alaska, and how sometimes it's very calm and beautiful, and you might think, you know, I think I could take a safe swim out there. And other times it's very, very angry and extremely dangerous. So I'd love to see the setting of in the interior of Alaska. And it was a very calm, pretty day. And the clip that I saw, at the same time, it can be really, really rough. And that represents life, too, I think.
So one of that story, which you just watched a clip, but if you watch the entire story, we have one of the characters right before the canoe race. He puts his hands into the water, into the river, and he just says, thank you for giving us life. Mm-hmm. And we just ask for safe travels upon you. And that's another reason I'm really excited about the series, is because our Alaska Native values, which really huge part of that is connection to the land and animals and having reverence, right? You were talking about how powerful the Yukon River is, and it's an entity, and we should be grateful. That's where our salmon, you know, come up every year. And I just came back from Gutcheje, Fort Yukon, and everybody was getting their fish wheels ready. Everyone's getting so excited for the king salmon, the Thlukcho, to come out. And that is a huge part of our culture. It's a time of celebration. And we hope that we are also able to show that and share that in the series.
That's really exciting. And as I listened to you, I went back to the first time I spent time on the river and was with an Alaska Native friend in his fish camp, his family's fish camp. Mm. And he pulled a king salmon out of the river. And the word that struck me then is the word that you used just a moment ago. So hairs are up on my neck. And you said reverence. And as my friend brought that fish out of the water, the first one of the season, it was with tremendous reverence that he did that. And the family was all around, you know, so his folks were there, his grandkids were there. So there were four generations of people celebrating that fish, that life that comes from that fish. And so the power of that intergenerational connection is palpable. And so I think it's I'm excited. Not many people get that experience, right? And so that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about your program.
So we actually have, as you may know, PBS Kids Online has all of these digital games that go with every series. And so for Molly, one of the digital games is a fishing game. And so you get to actually go fishing for the salmon. And embedded in that game are little messages that say, okay, we in Alaska, we take only what we need. We have enough to share with the community. We're done fishing now. Or she picks berries, and the same thing, once the bucket's full, we've picked enough. In Alaska, we take only what we need. And that message of, you know, we don't overconsume, and, you know, we're respectful of, you know, how much we're taking from the land is another, you know, element of why this show can have such an impact on children across the nation.
You know, Princess, when we began this conversation, you talked about how important your mom was for you and family and your grandparents and the community. How have elders influenced you in this work? And then how do you think about Molly in the context not only of her relationship with the other kids in the show, but with elders? How do you think about that?
Well, our core advisory group is made up of Elders Luke Titus, my mother Adeline Raboff, Dewey Hoffman, and Rochelle Adams. They aren't elders.
I know Dewey. He's a young man.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But their input has been absolutely vital, critical. I mean, we look to our elders to guide us and to help remind us of things that maybe we as younger people are not aware of in terms of protocols or etiquette and stories, of course. So when I think about the elders in my life and their teachings, whether it be of traditional stories or just how to be a good person, you know, how we respect one another, how we treat the land and animals, how we do beadwork, our traditional crafts, etc., that is absolutely an integral part of our everyday lives and our culture is very intergenerational. And Molly, the kids interact a lot with the elders in the community. And that is another element of the show. It is very intergenerational. And while our official audience age range is 4 to 8 year olds, I have a sneaky suspicion that adults and grandparents are going to be wanting to watch the show and take it into the show as well, because the elders are so revered in our community and likewise in the series.
How do you integrate these traditional values that are really, really powerful mm-hmm. and good and strong mm-hmm. with the modern mm-hmm. and the new? And so you not only have these traditional Alaska Native cultures and then this Western culture, but this Western culture is crazy dynamic. You know, it's changing all the time, right? And then you have these traditional stories and the actual notion of story itself, which is a traditional method of communication and learning and transmission of knowledge. And then technology, right? We're talking about digital storytelling here. So how do you think about those? I guess I think about it's tension, but it's not a negative connotation necessarily, but these polarities, I suppose. How do you think about those as you work on this project and create Molly and these stories?
So I think it's only negative if Indigenous knowledge is not respected and incorporated. And it's really interesting with Molly because our curriculum, we were funded by a huge Ready to Learn grant. And our main curriculum is something called informational text. And informational text is basically the everyday text we use to navigate our lives, being able to know how to use an index or a table of contents, being able to know how to read a map. It can also be text, informational text could be a caption on a photograph. That's all informational text. And a lot of underserved communities do not test well in that area, which is our main focus. And so Molly is this modern kid. She's a vlogger. She definitely knows how to use Google. Well, we don't call it Google, but she knows how to do a search on the internet. She uses the trading post that her parents run. They have a phone, a smartphone that she's able to use. And so I think that the show is good in the sense that it highlights how we can use all of these technologies to our benefit in a good way, also acknowledging that sometimes you have to go speak to a person. You have to go to the elder or your parent for that information. We can't glean everything from a computer. And also that books, there's a library, they go and they use you know, references from the library a lot. So I think that is very true of a lot of Indigenous people today. We are using all of those tools and using them in a way that's grounded in our Indigenous worldview. So, you know, I think it's a really nice marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Does Molly have a message? Is there a singular message that Molly is communicating, or is it a series of things? Is there a particular theme that Molly has a purpose to communicate and to transmit, if you will, as the protagonist of this series?
I don't think there's necessarily like one main message, like a superhero is like here to save the day.
Right.
But I feel like she's a problem solver. And when she sees something that needs to be fixed, she and her community, you know, step up to the charge and figure out how to do that. So she's definitely, it's very much an action adventure series, and she is gung-ho about solving problems. And again, that gets back to that risk taking and that fearlessness of like, let's do this.
So she's a confident person.
She
Molly
is.
Where does her confidence come from?
I think her confidence just comes from a really strong foundation of love and a community and family that just adore her and care for her and welcome her silliness and that curiosity and that go get 'em. You know, in the opening, she says, "Masit Cho, let's go."
That's great.
Yeah, she's that little, you know, feisty go-getter.
Mm-hmm. You know, having worked a bit in and around Alaska Native communities, I've seen that person many times. Mm-hmm. So that's powerful. It's really good. Let's talk a little bit about you here, and so rooted deeply in traditional Alaska Native culture, but working globally. I notice in your education that you studied international relations, and how did that come about? Tell us the story of your decision to study international relations.
I just have always been very curious and interested about other cultures and the world. I was actually born abroad, so maybe that has something to do with it. And I felt that at that time, international relations is really, it's interdisciplinary. And I really, while I don't feel like I have necessarily done a lot of work in that arena, for me, education and that foundation of at that time, my undergraduate work, it's really about exploring and honing key skills, which for me was writing and is writing. And I tell this to young people all the time, writing, being able to write well, a well-written letter or email means everything. I've done a lot of grant writing in my life, screenwriting, you know, poetry, all those things, you know, come from that foundation of just being able to also create an argument. And that is key in our advocacy as, well, not for anybody, not just Indigenous people, but you have to be able to craft a good op-ed. Well, as you know.
Great. So more on that line, going to the craft, you know, you've studied film as well. Mm-hmm. And tell us what inspired you? What are some of the lessons you learned, or perhaps even the people who were involved in your education such that you're here now leading this really interesting, innovative program?
One of the key people, teachers in my life, is a professor named Leonard Kamerling, who teaches here. And he approached the craft of screenwriting with just so much passion. And he was really just very authentic and genuine in his love for storytelling and filmmaking. And I really gleaned so much from him, and he really set a very strong foundation for my tastes and what I was drawn to in moving images and film and in screenwriting. And because of his mentorship, I was able to submit to the Sundance Film Institute and ended up going through their program for writing, screenwriting, directing, and producing. So that was one of my key teachers. Of course, Sundance, because I didn't go to film school, really was my film school, and I had amazing mentors and teachers through that program. And then I just continued to find work. I lived in Los Angeles for about 9 years, and I continued to get any job I could to be exposed to film sets, etc. And when I decided to come back to Alaska, at that time we had this amazing film tax incentive program. And so I actually was able to garner work as an actor, and I'm in the Screen Actors Guild. So being able to have union jobs available was wonderful. Then it went away. And that is one thing I really would like to see our state bring back, is some sort of a film tax incentive program. We're one of the last remaining places where you can find winter backgrounds, snow, et cetera. And I think that our state needs to diversify as much as possible, our economy. So that's something I would love to see come back. I also just wanted to, you know, mention that the UAF Film and Theater Program has been very pivotal. And I, at one point, I don't know if you know this, but I actually taught acting for camera here with Maya Salganik, and we partnered up. And she's also, the UAF Film and Television have been doing a lot of work on Molly, which is wonderful. So for me, what I call, what many of us refer to as narrative sovereignty, we have this long history of Indigenous people, our stories being told by somebody else. Somebody else has been in control of our image and stories, and literally people have come in and extracted our stories for their own use, that appropriation.
It's something I wanted to talk with you about, because you know, I learned that in my experience working in some Alaska Native communities, and that is the permission granted by the storyteller, or the permission granted by the community from which the story came prior to telling the story. Mm-hmm. And that honor, that respect for the story was really powerful. And of course, in Western culture, we recognize that through copyright and through other sort of legalistic means. But I'd like to explore that a little bit more with you, because I noticed that and I thought, wow, that is really powerful and very respectful. It's not a legalistic construct, but a cultural, deep cultural concept. Could you talk a little bit more about any concerns you have in that area, and then how you address them through this production?
I would say, again, we have that long history of people coming in, and you look at the history of the cowboy and Indian movies and the really inaccurate and negative stereotypes that exist in the world today around Indigenous people have everything to do with media. And it is such a powerful medium. So as we now, as we move towards more narrative sovereignty or visual narrative, you know, sovereignty, it's really important for Hollywood and the media makers to recognize it's not okay to come into a community or take a story and do what you want with it. If it deals with Indigenous people, we need to be a part of that process. And with Molly, WGBH really made the right move in saying, well, we don't know anything about Alaska. We don't know anything about Alaska Natives. And came up here and formed that advisory, a core advisory group. So then we became partners. And in that partnering, we are moving towards a model of more narrative sovereignty. We're also building our capacity as actor, voice actors, as screenwriters, as producers, etc., which I really hope, the intent is that the people that are involved with this show, you know, spin off and create their own original content. I feel very strongly that we as Alaska Native people and our values need to be shared with a worldwide audience. And as we look at strategies to confront the issues that we're dealing with in Alaska or around the world, especially with what we're facing right now with climate change, integrating an Indigenous worldview, I strongly believe, is a key factor in finding the right way to move forward, because it incorporates social justice and environmental justice. And we need that holistic view right now, humanity does, moving forward.
Respect, learning, sense of humor. Yeah. You know, when I reflect on a number of those values too, they include a wide variety of really, really positive aspects, right? And I think that whether one is, as a non-Alaska Native, I look at those values and sign me up. They're wonderful, and I think they do transcend cultures as well, as in addition to being deeply rooted here. And work, there's a work ethic also that's very powerful, because of course things weren't handed to folks 10,000 years ago or even 100 years ago or today. So very, very powerful work ethic that I think is helpful to remember. Yeah. and think about too. So what is, getting back to Molly and the production, how do you think about it getting into schools? Is there a strategy for that specifically? I know you have an education background as well. And so in addition to seeing it on TV, is there a strategy for getting it into school so young people who may not have access at home are going to be have access to it in school or some other place?
Yes, so PBS Learning Media Online, WGBH, will have all sorts of resources, not only for teachers, but also for parents. And we are working with Alaska Native educators in our audience age range to help inform and create what those materials are going to be. So they're in the process of being created. One of our stories is based on Luke Titus's story of being taken away to boarding school. And it's a beautiful, emotional, but very hopeful story that is sharing a part of our American history that a lot of people are not even aware of. And so that story in particular, I was just reviewing a one sheet so that teachers, parents, communities can have a little bit more background information on the history of the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs boarding schools, what happened in Alaska and, you know, across the nation. Also in Canada, where they refer to them as residential schools, being able to have a dialogue and just a little bit more of, you know, in-depth information is critical, I think. Having those resources for teachers to bring Molly into the classroom and explore more of the Native values, all of that is going to be, there's definitely a plan for that.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, as I look at Alaska now, and specifically a lot of our politics in Alaska, we face very strong headwinds. And so I think it's really valuable that you're doing this work, because you're contributing to a positive vision for Alaska today, but also in our future. And that's much appreciated, it truly is, because we need as many positive voices about our state as we possibly can. And it's not just for us and people here who live in Alaska, but I'd like your views. Again, this deep connection to Alaska and traditional cultures here, and also this interest in and study of the world and international relations. How do you see Alaska, if you do, as a model for other cultures and other societies in dealing with these challenging issues of climate, for example, and environment and development, technology, education, particularly of Indigenous people? Any thoughts about how we might position ourselves as a model for a positive future and perhaps resolution or solution to a lot of these challenges?
Well, that's a big question mm-hmm. to take on. I would say there's a lot of things that give me hope. And you mentioned earlier, highlighted our propensity to not be afraid of working hard and rolling up our sleeves. And one thing that really transcends not just Alaska Natives, but all Alaskans, you know, when someone's stuck on the side of the road, everybody comes to your aid. And we saw what happened, you know, after the earthquake, you know, hit Anchorage. Those roads were fixed in 48 hours. So what I don't think we have even begun to tap into our potential.
So what's next with Molly? Where are you heading?
Well, I think I have a lot of interviews to do, and along with the rest of our, you know, Alaska Native advisors and production team, we premiere on July 15th. In the CBC, who's our partner in Canada, they're premiering in September, October. And we're just excited for that premiere date and for Americans to be able to watch the show. I can't wait to hear the feedback.
That's great. Princess, thank you. This is very generous of you. I know you're busy out in the community talking about this tremendous new production. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your passion. And thanks for this production. I think it's going to change some lives. And that, I think, is really powerful and much needed. So thank you.
Masit Cho, thank you for having mm-hmm. me.
You're welcome.